Where did the St. Louis Cardinals train during the war?
Well, during the war, we trained in Cairo, Illinois. We had a field on there. The first year was all right. We had very good condition. It was a nice place to train. But the second year, we had a lot of rain, and the field was underwater. And we did most of our training inside in the gymnasium. And after a certain length of time, we had to return to St. Louis and resume our training right at Sportsman's Park in St. Louis.
Fine. Can you tell me a little bit about the trips to and from cities?
Well, we used to enjoy the trips to and from cities on the train. I know many a time that we'd play a doubleheader in St. Louis on a Sunday afternoon, and our train usually left at Sunday night at 6 o'clock, and they'd have to hold the train up for us if we'd go to New York or Philadelphia. But we used to enjoy those trips because the washroom of the Pullman car, we used to gather there. We'd have a lot of fun. We'd talk about the ball game, about the ball team we were going to play and the ball clubs we did play, and we got a lot of information. And it was real enjoyable just to get back there and sit and chat about the game in general. And I think we learned an awful lot from each other by just sitting there talking about the ball game.
So in other words, in the minds of the players, the game didn't stop just with the final out. In other words, you were kind of eating, thinking, and sleeping baseball.
Well, that's true. That's true, Kit. We did. I mean, actually, we did eat, sleep, and drink baseball, and we enjoyed it very much. Like I say, those train trips, our shortest trip on a train was from St. Louis to Chicago or Chicago to St. Louis, whichever way you want to put it, which was a six-hour trip. But for those 6 hours, you sit there and talk about the baseball game. You'd get on a train, maybe have some dinner on a diner, and then you'd get back there, and everybody would start. Maybe a few guys that play pinochle, or there was no gambling. We didn't have enough money to gamble in those days. But we enjoyed playing a game of pinochle or canasta or something like that to while a time away. But usually, most of the time, the talk was about the game of baseball.
Fine. Well, Mr. Harris, when and under what circumstances did you come up with the A's?
Well, Mr. Mack bought me from Atlanta, old Atlanta Crackers, in 1939, the end of the 1939 season, and I came up and pitched during the war through the middle of 1944, went in service, and came back and pitched in 46 for
him. When was your first season with the A's?
1940.
I see. Do you have any special recollections about any of the war years? Of course, the A's were not in the thick of it as far as the pennant race is concerned, but did any other things stand out in your mind?
Well, first let me say this, that I'm one of the many ball players who are proud to say that I pitched for a fellow like Mr. Mack, the grand old man of baseball, and I enjoyed every minute being with the A's and Mr. Mack. With the exception of one thing, as you said, we wasn't in the thick of nothing but last place, and this was due to the fact that Mr. Mack had to, during the Depression, right after the Depression, had to sell off his great players in order to make it. And that's why he was rebuilding, and that's why we were in last place most every season. I think we finished fifth one year during my stay with the A's, and of course, after that, they come around and had a pretty good club, made a run second place one year, and with a great infield they had right after the war.
You say that you went into service in the middle of 1944. May I ask in what branch of the service you were in, and if you did any traveling?
Yeah, I went in the middle of 1944, and I'll never forget it. Bobo Newsom was a real good friend of mine, and they knew I was going in service. I was pitching against the White Sox the last game, and I won the game 4-3 for my 10th win that year, and having one of my better years for the club. And the players all made up a little satchel full of money and put it in a little Navy bag, and it was $101 bills in it. And
wonderful.
So I got home that night, our daughter and son was real young then, and I dumped all those $100 on the bed, and they were counting. We were having a ball, and so Bobo went to Mr. Mack, and he said, told him what he's doing, and Mr. Mack said, look, I was going to take care of him a long time before you thought about it. So the next morning, I went in to see Mr. Mack before I left, and he paid me up for the rest of the season and gave me another $500 check going away, which I appreciated, and turned out about as well as it could be when you're leaving to go to a war, I guess.
Sure. What branch of the service did you...
Navy. I was in the Navy, and I spent most of my time in service in Honolulu.
In Honolulu, I see. Well, I was a Navy man myself. One thing I would like to ask you about in passing, you may or may not have heard about it. In fact, if you don't wish to comment on it, please don't. This occurred, from what I was told, during the 1945 season. There was a catcher named Charlie George, I believe was called the Greek, and then one day an argument erupted at home plate, and the umpire made the mistake of taking off his mask and promptly got popped right in the face. And as a result, George was thrown out of baseball. Have you heard one way or the other as to whether that did occur?
Well, I'm sure it did occur, although I wasn't here. Mm-hmm. And knowing Greek George, I wouldn't be surprised at anything he might do. We played against each other and so forth in the Southern League when I was with the Atlanta Crackers, and he was with Nashville and a couple other clubs. It seemed like someone sold Greek George to the major leagues. I think Larry Gilbert, it was at Nashville, sold him three times, I think, three different years to three different clubs, and he always sent him back. He was kind of a high-strung boy. He wasn't a bad fella. I liked the Greek all right, and was a good-looking ball player. But he let his temper run away with him at times, and I'm sure it happened. I don't think there's any doubt about it happening, because he used to get in a lot of scraps in the Southern League and around all through his baseball career.
Bobby Doerr wrote me a letter recently saying that, in his opinion, the ball got deader as the war went on. Any comment on that?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about it. We started one season. If they'd have kept playing with that ball, I remember Rudy York hitting one in Shibe Park, and ordinarily you'd think it would have been on the roof, and left fielder came in and caught it. I don't know. I think the hides got green, and they didn't have enough time to cure them. Couldn't get a hold of the hides like they could in advance before the war and after the war. And they got green. They turned yellow during the game. And I think this was one of the big reasons for the ball not being as live. It certainly was deader during the war than it did before and after the war.
I see. It's often been said that several characters showed up in the major leagues during the war, that is, men who wouldn't have been there otherwise. Do any stand out in your mind, any particular ball players?
Well, right offhand, it's hard to name an outstanding one. I believe that one-armed boy played over there, Pete Gray, for the Browns, which was probably unheard of, and probably never had a chance to play in the major leagues if it hadn't been for the war. And there were a number of ball players who wouldn't have been in the major leagues, naturally, if it hadn't been for the war. But also, on the other hand, there were several ball players that come along during the war that probably wouldn't have got a chance and proved they could play and stayed in the major leagues after the war was over, even after all the stars got back and so forth. So I think it worked both ways, really, as far as players concerned. Of course, you brought up older fellas and good AAA players during the war, which you ordinarily you'd already sent them down, mm-hmm. and now you've got to bring them back because you don't have anybody else to play.
I see. There was, I believe, an ace pitcher called Jittery Joe Barry, and I heard that he got his nickname because of an unusual pickoff motion in the first. Do you mind describing it?
I think he got that name for something else. Jittery Joe pitched for us 2 years. In fact, he had two fine years for this ball club. I think he won 21 games in 2 years relief pitching for the A's during the war, and that was a pretty good record from where I was sitting. And Jittery was a high-strung boy from Little Rock and funny, and he never would get on the scales with anyone to see how much he weighed. And he always, during the game, he would takeout after a base runner from the mound. He'd run right towards him. And I remember one day Lou Boudreau was on third base, and he's off the bag about 10 feet, and Joe just left the mound and ran right directly at him. And evidently, Boudreau kind of froze, and he had to dive to get back to bag safe. But his move, really, his move to bases wasn't any different than probably anyone else's.
So what you're saying is that he got his nickname because of his high-strung temper.
Well, I think
so. More than any mannerism in his pitching.
Oh, I think so. He was not jittery on the mound. I remember when we played an exhibition game down in Atlantic City, one of the more years, and Jerry was pitching with the bases loaded in the last inning, and the score tied, and he went into a big long windup, and that Atlantic City wind blew him right off the mound for a balk, and they won the game. The other team won the game. It was really funny. It sticks out in my mind very plainly. He's very thin, and like I say, he never would get on the scales. He only weighed about 135 pounds, and it blew him right off the mound towards second base. And I think the same thing happened to Hoyt Wilhelm in the All-Star game out at Frisco one year. Blew him off the mound.
Yes, I remember that game, the so-called jet stream in Kansas yeah. Park. I think Stu Miller had trouble with it, too.
Yeah, imagine.
Mr. Harris, one last question, and that is, during the war, of course, here again, I was born in February of 1945, so I certainly can't talk from experience, but I do know that there were travel restrictions. I guess meatless days during the week and so on. Let's talk about travel restrictions first. Where did the A's train during the war?
Well, we trained up at Frederick, Maryland, and we got snowed out of two or three games. And I don't think any pitcher pitched over six innings at one year. And Mr. Mack went on a theory he's going to pitch a pitcher three innings apiece like spring training, and this opening day, I had the opening day assignment in Washington. I pitched eight full innings the first time out, and we were 1-1. He took me out for a pinch hitter, and we finally lost the game in the 11th inning. And the next day, Bobo Newsom pitched a four-hitter in Shibe Park against Boston, the opening day back in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. So it was tough, but I got to say this. I think anything is better in a war.
Sure. Because of the wartime restrictions, did any other unusual events occur that stand out in your mind?
Well, I could tell one funny story. I guess everyone knows beer and you said food was restricted and so forth. And finally, one of our characters on the ball club, after a real hot day, says, "Come on, let's go have a beer." I said, "Where are you going to find a beer?" He says, "I know." So we climbed 10 fences and went through eight alleys and finally knocked on the back door, and the guy slid the little thing back, and so this player turned to us and he says, "He only got slits." So I thought it was a real cute story, really, knowing this character is much better. But all in all, it wasn't as tough as everyone thinks about. You can learn to eat, take care of yourself with a good diet, besides having steak every night and caviar in the morning. You can still get along. I thought our country did quite well feeding everyone and everything else during the war.
Fine. Okay, Mr. Harris, thank you very much.